we'd just like to also at this point welcome the Minister of Trade and Industry, Dr. Rob Davies. He will, just as the DM, you know, participate, so he too will at some point be making an input in this regard. The other one that I do need to recognise here, of course, is Professor Ben Turek, and as many of us know, he founded and heads up the Institute for African Alternatives. Thank you very much for being here again with us, Professor Turek. Okay. And, no, we haven't forgotten you, Cecil. You're still there, good. Quite a big delegation here. We've got a senior vice president, Miss Renelle Thunder, right? But I don't see her. Is she somewhere in the back? Then we have Mr. Mike Bishimbul, thank you, and Mr. Johan Tate, Vice President. Well, Mr. Mike there is the Vice President, a lot of our presidents, eh? And then another Mr. Johan Tate, Vice President, Group Regulatory, Mr. Heiko Elveld, Parliamentary Liaison. Right. I'm not sure why we've got so many Vice Presidents, but here we are. Okay. I'm sure you'll explain how that works. But what we'd really like to hear is exactly what CEFA are up to when it comes to value addition to our raw resources, and how are they ensuring that there's job creation as well as economic growth in the country directly, considering we gave government at one point gave you guys a freebie, a full handout. And in a way, it should still be part of us. So it's over to you. Who's going to lead us?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'm the members of the Portfolio Committee, ladies and gentlemen, Minister, DDG. Thank you for this opportunity to address the committee on this very important topic. We are privileged to provide our experiences, and we look forward to any future input that we can make on this particular topic. That is the case. I think the Chair has already introduced some of us, but my name is Sean Taylor. I am Vice President for Industry and Stakeholder Affairs. I've been next to me, Mike Bissell, who is the Vice President for Strategy and Development for Sacramento Bay Central. And behind me, the next behind me, I am Ito Alfels, who is our Parliamentary Liaison. Let me also please apologize for the absence of Renelle Thunder, who's my senior. Unfortunately, she couldn't make it, and I must apologize for not being here today. As we have limited time, I'm going to get right into it, and what I would like to talk the committee through today is really the four following themes. The first being giving the committee an idea of where we are and where we are going. Secondly, our beneficiation process, and here specifically, we will talk about our technology, our products and our downstream input. This is really the reason why we are here today. The strategy, which we believe is also strongly aligned with the National Development Plan, and we've been able to do that specifically because we have been able to successfully beneficiate natural resources. Last but not least, we would like to then also touch on lessons learned. We have traveled a long journey for 64 years, and we believe that there are a number of things that we have learned from our experiences, and we'd like to share some of these with the committee. I think in terms of travel today, we are a company that is in essence present in 37 countries internationally, and while I'd really like to talk to you about some of that today, I would like to focus basically into our activities in South Africa, which is really our Secunda and our customer facility, because this is really where our beneficiation initiative started. We also would like to mention at this stage that our partnership with both South African government and that with the Mozambican government has allowed us as a partnership to bring gas into South Africa, which is also from our perspective something that we are very proud of. If I go to the next slide, if you look at Platinum, as I said earlier, we are a company that can almost be called a senior citizen, but we are only 64 years young, and we are already seen as a global leader in both filter liquids and gatter liquids. And we did our first filter liquids in CDL and GPL. Now, particularly on this particular slide, I'd like to reference our nurture and growth strategy, which is our strategy that is focused towards Southern Africa, our Southern Africa strategy. And in essence, the objective here is to ensure, among other things, that our Secunda and Tafelberg facilities are operationally sustainable to at least the year 2050. And there is something that I will talk to later as well. Because of the fact that we have been able to successfully beneficiate natural resources, we employ about 4,000 people directly. We invest about 800 million rand in our communities around our facilities, and I'll speak to that as well. And in the last 5 years, we have invested about 95 million rand in capital inside Africa specifically. Because of the fact that we are also listed in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, and as well as on the New York Stock Exchange, we fly the South African flag very proudly both here in South Africa and abroad. I think if we then go to the area that is really the heart of why we are here, which is our beneficiation process, our product and announcement input, I think for our first 64 years, we have many firsts, and I'll talk to some of that today. We have improved, added, and adapted our technology in order to remain innovative in our approach and in the energy field. And I will reference some of these today as well. So if we go to the slide, it's a little bit busy. It really references three of our beneficiation options that we have. The main one, which is really CDL as a stakeholder liquid, which is the one which is the lower one on the slide. GDL, which is the one at the top of it, because of the actual liquid, and the one right top, which is gas power. Now, this is the process where we in essence take a lower value commodity upgraded to a higher value product, and using this particular process here, it's called the liquid as an example. What we need to do, we take lower grade coal, and when I say low grade coal, it is in fact coal that otherwise would not have been usable in any other process, nor would it have been able to be exported. So it's really coal that, the lower grade coal that we take, we in fact add water and oxygen, we heat it up and then gasify the coal in essence, and then we feed the synthetic battery into our reactor, which is called the SPAC reactor, and this is really the core of our technology. From there, then we produce a number of products, both chemical components, co-product and fuel components, and that process, in order to convert it to different products, is done really through the addition of a catalyst. In our CDL process, it's an iron catalyst, and then in our GDL process, it's a cobalt catalyst. Now, interestingly, if you look at our gas to power initiative, we are now generating gas to power. In 2012, we opened a gas to power facility in Tafelberg, and we are now generating up to 69% of our own electricity requirements for our facilities. And to give you an idea of how we got to this point, our journey really started in 1950, which is when Tafelberg started. And we really started our first plant in around 1955, which was really a liquid fuels based facility. Around 1980, we completed the National 2 and 3, and this is where our chemical journey started. By 2007, we opened and started production of our first gas liquid facility outside of South Africa in Qatar, which is running very well. And then as I mentioned earlier in 2012, we had the Tafelberg gas to power facility bring online. And only last week, in 2014, we inaugurated a gas to power facility in Mozambique as well, on the 28th of August. I think, and this provides us a pretty good idea of how we have taken a base technology, improved, added on it, in order to ensure that we stay with times as well. More importantly, because of the fact that we innovated our technology to the extent that we are able to contribute to energy and supply security, specifically in South Africa. But innovation at Team Fassel as the first company to get approval for fully synthetic jet fuel. Now, this is important not only because it was the first of America, but also it was the first in the world. And because of the fact that we could upgrade basically gas and coal, we are now producing 1,000 megawatts of electricity, 8 billion of liquid fuels, and 3.5 tons of chemicals. Now, all of these products are used in various applications in the downstream sector, and I'll speak to some of that right now. If you look at some of the products, we use it both in South Africa and globally, from hot melt adhesives all the way down to mobile phone circuit boards. And our chemicals also has applications, and it's an important input into the downstream sector in South Africa. Now, here, once again, from packaging to panels, from customers to South Africa, to all around, to all the main parts of the world. Now, because of the fact that we are very conscious of the fact that this is an important input into the downstream sector, we have put in place a number of support and development processes to ensure we are ahead of the technology and also that we support our customers. So if you look at the next slide, the downstream support on polymers, part of the business facility. We have a technical center in Modderfontein that is focused on providing our customers technical and market development support. And we also actively assist customers in pursuing solution-oriented approaches and also in actually facilitating new business. Our Fassel fuel testing facility, actually right down here in the Western Cape in Newsenburg, is actually a state-of-the-art facility where we test fuel engines and test engines in order to see that they run optimally. What is very particular about this fuel testing facility is that this is one of only a few in the world and the only one in Southern Africa. Now, our ability therefore to continue to innovate has allowed us to in fact address some of the socio-economic challenges that South Africa has. We believe that we'll be able to continue doing so as we've done in the past. We've already spoken to our nurture and growth strategy, where we in fact have taken the strategic decision to operationally extend the life of our facilities in Secunda and Zuckerberg to at least 2050. Now, because of our strategy, we believe we can give a closely aligned with some of the imperatives, specifically job creation, infrastructure, environmental sustainability, inter-regional trade in Southern Africa, and then of course the association. Of course, these are only some of the themes, they're not all of the themes in the National Development Plan, but I'd like to speak to these five specifically. On job creation, we employ 34,000 people directly, just about almost 8,000 of them are employed in our mines. During 2009, February 2009 and June 2014, we in fact created 20,000 temporary employment opportunities through our various mega projects in Zuckerberg. If we go on to infrastructure, because we believe that our employees must work in areas that they are proud of, specifically around our facilities, we are investing 800 billion over a period of 3 years in our communities in Mpumalanga and as well as into the Free State. I'm not going to go into the details, but I think the members have the slides, and if there's any questions, you're more than welcome to direct them to me and to the team. And because of the fact that we believe that our communities are important, we are investing in growing responsibly and sustainably as regard as the environment is concerned. Since we've been able to bring natural gas through the partnership with the South African government and the Mozambican government, we've been able to mitigate 10 million tons per annum of carbon emissions from our facilities. More importantly, we've also been able to bring a gas-to-power facility that is not just a low-carbon facility, but it also assists, as I said earlier, with the pressure on the national grid. We spend about 2 billion rands per annum. Over the last 10 years, we spend about 2 billion rands per annum ensuring our environmental sustainability. Regional trade, and I'm not going to go through all of the details, but I think there's quite a bit. I think it's very important that Sassel is of the opinion that we believe that our energy security is linked to the region, and that is why we fixed it together with our partners. 21 million rand by the end of this year in developing and producing natural gas in Mozambique. I think we are particularly proud of this initiative because of the fact that this was a collaborative partnership with the two governments, and we've been able to establish a viable gas industry. More importantly, we've been able to make available a clean energy source to just over 400 customers downstream. We are also particularly pleased that this is an area that has been identified in the IPAC 6 as an area where we should be looking at how we can further bring gas into the downstream as well. Now, our engagement has just not been regionally based, it has also been based in South Africa. And once again, I'm not going to go into all of this detail. I'm only going to touch on two or three areas. The third one is the 14 billion rand Secunda growth. And what we've done there is that we've increased our capacity at the Secunda facility by 3.2%. That was the 14 billion rand investment. As I would have told members earlier, we have also decided on a 2050 strategy. In order to ensure that facilities can run as long, you have to have a feedstock. And we are therefore investing 40 billion rand in a coal mine replacement program. Up to date, we have spent about 60% of that money. I also believe there may be opportunities on the oil and gas side. And that's why, right down at the bottom, we are exploring for oil and gas in both the West Coast and in KwaZulu-Natal waters along the South African coast. The West Coast exploration is being undertaken on a 50-50% partnership with Century SA. So our investment in South Africa has been significant. Over the last 5 years, we've spent about 95 billion rand in South Africa. We believe that our Southern Africa 2050 strategy will ensure that we remain a leading industrial company in the country. We are building offices in Sandton, which is going to be our global headquarters, and we hope to move into those offices by 2060. We also believe that we have international shale gas experience, also an item and an agenda that has been identified in the IPAC 6, and we are more than happy to share our international shale gas experience with South Africa and ensure that we can see whether they in fact some of the volumes and reserves that are estimated by the EIA. We will therefore continue to leverage our homegrown technology and in that way continue to contribute to the national development plan. As a last slide, lessons learned, and I know that I'm running out of time, I'm not going to go through all of that. So I really just want to focus on three or four areas. The first one being continuous investment in R&D. And I think this is something that Travel has done over the 6 or 4 years, and it has put us in good stead. It does come with the requirement of lots of capital, but not just capital, but investment into skills. To give the members an idea, we have about 1,000 scientists at Travel, of which of them just over 250 is PhD. And this is how we continue to innovate. Our partnerships, government, technology companies, we believe this needs to be collaborative, where we believe that we need to understand the desires and needs of each of the partners in order to make that partnership viable. In terms of enabling the regulatory framework, from a capital perspective, an enabling regulatory framework is one where we want to have collaboratively look at what is possible and what is not, and how we can craft together a mutually beneficial relationship that will advance the needs of both Africa and some of the players involved. Lastly, but not the least, sometimes infrastructure and utilities are in fact at the lower end of the scale, but I think this is the key building block to ensure a competitive and sustainable base of economic activity. Whether it's the cost of competitive electricity, whether it's a stable labor force or labor environment, labor efficiency, these are all things that we need to have in place to ensure that we can sustainably benefit the natural resources of South Africa. While there are some other issues that I would have touched on, I think those are sufficient from our perspective, and I'm more than happy members. I certainly hope, Chair, that we were able to constructively add to this discussion, and I thank the Chairman and Members of Parliament for their time and providing such an opportunity to hear today.
Thank you very much indeed. The Monday one was just a little concerned, and I hope it will come up in the discussion, because this colloquium is about beneficiation and industrialization, and particularly the downstream is largely dealt, I'd say 95% with the upstream. And this, of course, is a concern, because the downstream relates a lot to the processing of chemicals and absorbing manufactured products such as plastic products, etc. And not simply about making fuel out of coal and gas. While that is important, absolutely, but we're going to have a very robust engagement, I know, and I should just acknowledge yet again, DEG is here, he's starting in the field, plus the chief director responsible for chemicals, cosmetics, plastics, etc. down there. And of course the Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Raj Naidu. I am, as you know, Honourable Members, going to be handing over the chairing of the discussion to a member of the committee, as has been our practice throughout this colloquium, and this is on this occasion will be to the Honourable Dean MacPherson, and he's coming over right now to kind of take the chair. But there will be concluding remarks today, not by me, but by Alec, who will be chairing that last session, the Honourable Sorbo. We will just close off with 5 minutes. Thank you very much. I'll be handing over now to the Honourable MacPherson.
Which was looking at the transformation of rare earth which are exported in the form of mineral sands from this province at the moment. And it's underpinning a potential project in Saldana, which would transform that into titanium alloy. What we got at the time the feasibility study was done a few years ago was $400 a ton for the sand. But if we turn it into titanium alloy, which is not even aircraft parts, but it's a metal, we would have got over $100,000 a ton, obviously several tons of sand in that, but I think you can see there was value in the jobs at the moment compared to other economies. I think the other point that I think we need to emphasize and strongly draw to the attention is we've been talking about this beneficiation for years and years and years. But the window of opportunity for us to beneficiate is actually closing. These minerals are a wasting asset. We don't have them in Yemen. The life of them may be relatively high. We have a high proportion of the world's iron ore, precious metals, platinum, and things of that sort, but they're not available indefinitely. And so we have to take account of that, reality as well. Now, I think that we have capability, we have ability, we have the resources, we've got to turn that into a competitive advantage. Now, what do we need to do? A number of things. We need to ensure that there is secure the supply access to the minerals. We need to ensure that the research and development, the development of the capabilities in beneficiation is actually taking place. And quite a lot of work of that sort has already been done by the DTI. I mentioned before that we are working on the proclamation of 182 platinum-based special economic zones, which would produce jewelry, which would produce catalytic converters, which will also be able to generate, I think, this very exciting new industry of fuel cell technology. And there's a lot of work, a lot of scientific work to be done on that. And some of this will be that we establish an SEA, put in place support measures. We try to deal with the general climate issues in the country, which, say, energy supply is a critical challenge. But at the same time, I think what's absolutely essential is that we've got to ensure that the mineral inputs are available at a competitive price, and a competitive price means at a lower price in South Africa close by than is available outside of this country. So the one pager is just an attempt to show that imperative. Take the first example, the platinum group metals. The auto catalytic converter industry says that if the price of a catalytic converter produced in South Africa was 10% cheaper than it is now, they would be able to grow their production five times and consume half of South Africa's PGMs. Now, the PGM metal itself accounts for 50% of the cost of a catalytic converter, and stainless steel is 20% of that. So if we've got a 15 or 20% discount on the price, that would make a huge difference in terms of our ability to produce catalytic converters. Well, we can take the steel. I'm going to come back to that. Iron ore accounts for 20% of the steel cost. And AMSA was able, ArcelorMittal was able to reduce current prices by 10%. Then I think that would amount to a very, very significant injection into industries using steel products. Now, to come to Sasol, polymers. Polymers can be up to 60% of the cost of plastic, so 10 or 15% discount on the current polymer price would make a significant impact on the price of plastics, and we have a competitive advantage to downstream manufacturing. Now, some of the policy instruments that we can employ are, I think, these are the things that I think should be the subject of a lot of discussion and reflection in this colloquium. Because I think that what you're basically saying is that successful beneficiation depends not on just a single policy instrument, but depends on an aligned implementation of several instruments. So it means supporting industries, it means creating special economic zones, but it also means that we need to assure that we get that price discount that I've already been trying to argue for. And that means, I think, that we've got a toolbox which is being developed. Some of the requirements in the MPRDA, Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act, some of the requirements in the Mining Charter, some of the competition policy measures, and I'm going to programs. And now, questions of providing perhaps preferential utility prices for companies that are working with us, and then industrial finance. If you don't have the ETI, have direct control of all of those levers, but I guess it's really critical that those levers are deployed in a coherent, systematic way to ensure that we move in this direction. Let me say, I do make a comment on really what we're talking about. I think we're talking about two important former state-owned companies which are now upstream capital intensive inputs into downstream industries, and both of them, one just now and the other one a few days ago, are getting inputs to this colloquium. The other one, of course, is ArcelorMittal, which is the heir to ISCOR. Now, I think we need to address and understand that there is a question of price policy by these entities, which has been the subject of a lot of research, a lot of complaints by upstream manufacturers, but even more importantly, of findings by the competition authorities, that there is, I think, a pricing problem with these particular entities in the prices that they are charging to downstream producers. What we are not getting is we are not getting prices which are actually supporting downstream manufacturing. I do have to say that I did see the report which is widely publicized of the input that was given by ArcelorMittal. I think I need to make a few comments on that. I think the picture of what's been happening in steel production, though, that's an important background, because I think what was reported here is not exactly the way we see it. We don't see an industry struggling with electricity prices and a flood of cheap imports, but that's the root of the problem. We see actually an industry which over years has been reducing the production of steel products in South Africa. For example, in 2001, ISCOR produced 6464 tons of steel per annum, and in 2012, AMSA was producing 590, with a 20% decline in steel production in this country. We've also seen that this has taken place at a time when the world steel production has grown by about 6%. So we've seen a decline in South Africa. We've seen problems in maintenance, which, let me just put it this way, I think that there is a case to be answered that maintenance investments have not been sufficient. We've seen breakdowns in the Thunder Bay and in the KwaZulu-Natal plant. We've also seen that imported steel products, which are used by downstream manufacturers, are no longer being produced in South Africa. And I think that's the background. It's not, I think, that the users of steel products are wanting to import, but the products they used to get from steel manufacturers in South Africa are not available any longer. Now, I don't want to get into a debate and an argument with companies and to exchange different analyses and different diagnostics. Just to say that what we really want to have is, I think, we need to have a different kind of conversation with him. It's a conversation which I have raised at the very highest levels of ArcelorMittal. It's leadership of Rome. It's very top leadership. I've said to them, let us actually change the conversation. Not from how you set your prices, and I think there was one very interesting observation that was made here, that the pricing policy is still based on import parity pricing. We need to have a pricing model. Our objective is to have a pricing model, maybe take out the Chinese price out of the market, but which would locate in the bottom quartile of world prices. And other manufacturers tell us they can do it in South Africa under the condition that we find in South Africa. So what does it take for us to locate steel manufacturing in South Africa that delivers on the price at the steel? I'm just saying that one of the forms of steel manufacturing is that just ArcelorMittal. There's also scrap metal, smelting, and we've introduced a number of new regulations which are still being contested, but I think that we've basically seen our way through all of that, where we will insist on a price discount for local users of scrap metal. then there are other potential projects which would use what's called high-felt iron ore, which would involve different technologies, smaller technologies. But I think we need to change the conversation. We need to change the conversation with Sasol as well. I gave a figure which suggested if we saw a significant reduction in the polymer price, we'd have a significant downstream production. Over the years, East West Africa has received a significant amount of support from the state. If we are able to find our way into a different kind of conversation, where we are working together around the national agenda, I think that if we can find that the governments and the departments, we can be helpful, more helpful than we already are, because I can say to Cecil next to me that we have already involved ourselves in representing Cecil in, for example, the cases which they are facing in Brazil, where they've been accused of subsidies and dumping. So I think that there are things that we can do. We can work together, we can achieve a lot more. But I guess my overall message is to say that really this question of finding a discounted price for minerals that feed into downstream industries is a very fundamental way of getting a beneficiation on the ground. If we're not able to achieve that, I think that our chances of achieving significant levels of beneficiation are going to be very, very much reduced. If the price which is charged is one which is even a monopoly price, then this phrase that has been used in some of the discussion, where I think mining companies have been saying they don't support one industry subsidizing another, I think that with monopoly pricing, we've seen downstream manufacturers supporting capital intensive upstream manufacturers. So I think that that really the message that comes from myself is that I think there's been a lot of very interesting work. I look forward to the reports or whatever outcome does come from this program. But I do want to say that I believe that it is absolutely critical that within a very short space of time, we change the policies in such a way that we actually do deliver on a discounted price of mineral product that supports manufacturing based on beneficiation and new competitive advantage for South African manufacturing based on the availability of mineral products. So let me stop there. That was just a brief input from myself. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. You certainly highlighted some very interesting points that I think that we will find common agreement on. And I'm glad that you addressed the elephant in the room, because when I looked at the presentation, I just saw, what have we learned? I didn't see anything about price fixing. So I'm glad that was right. I know we've given a minute of 15 minutes. So let's try and keep our questions confined and as short as possible so that we can give Sasol an opportunity to respond, and then I'll certainly make some comments at the end. So Honourable Matali, Honourable Gongi, Honourable Mantashe, and Honourable Lindiene. Thanks. And Honourable Shabambu. And then the word. Thank you, Honourable Sopo.
Thank you, Chair, for this opportunity to commend the two presentations. I had a comment question. It might be more of a comment than a question, because as indicated that we are here to try and see with the resources that are available in the country, what more can we do with them? The issue of beneficiation. And Sasol being one of the companies operating in South Africa and a product of state intervention, itself, what contribution can it make in ensuring that the issue of beneficiation is broadened beyond what they are doing, which is highly commendable in terms of what you do to change, to process coal and get fuel out of it. But there are other things that come out of what you are doing. As far as those issues are concerned, what can be your contribution? As the Minister of Health asked that direct question on policy.
really interested to know, because Subtle, in their presentation, they're saying they are supporting the national priorities of the country. Now the minister is putting a challenge that we have. The challenge of changing the private model in the country to support beneficiation. I mean, what is the position of SASOL in that in the proposal? You know, because we can receive this nice, you know, report that you're investing. One of the examples that I would put is that years ago you committed yourself to increase refining capacity in South Africa and in supporting downstream development. And you did not deliver to this commitment. Then the total stopped the windfall tax passing recommendation. Because you are not party to the national development of the country in terms of the national priorities. So what is your appetite on the defense?
Power to do so. I think that must utilize that. I mean, the appeal to the industry that they must give 10% discount, it's not durable, it's not going to be sustainable. Let us utilize the legal instruments to that is how we can be able to guarantee that TGMs are going to be locally benefited. I thought that maybe there should be a process that leads towards that, because these TGMs are living in the country, and majority of them are not sure if these mining companies are even reporting that they're going to benefit outside the country. Because the law says in Section 26(3) that whoever is going to benefit outside the country should do so only after a written notice to the minister. And I don't think majority of these corporations are doing so. And I think those are some of the things that need to, you know, unfortunately, the governance and business relations is not an issue of persuasion only. It must be some sense of set of rules that say you must comply with this, and that is how you can be able to move forward on some of the issues. I honestly think that obviously, if our government myself, I was going to nationalize it and locally beneficiate, but the legal instrument exists for you to work within the current framework in terms of how you can deal with issues. Now the issue on Fasol, I don't know if Fasol has explored the issue of processing of crude oil, which generates a lot of crude oil. When there are a lot of other products that comes out of crude oil, that you can get crude oil from Niger, Delta, from Angola, from other parts, and build a refinery that can generate adequate fuel. All this will achieve the purpose that you've identified, you know, saving in the foreign exchange. PIC has raised $3 billion come up energy, which is trying to that the foreign company. Maybe there might be a way that such would be dealt with differently because of capacity. Because it's a lot of issues, the issue that has been raised, that why can't the committee and the ministry tell us all to not overprice the industrial inputs into plastic manufacturing sector? Why does it have to go to the Competition Commission in a direct way over a long term? Competition Commission was saying in this collegium that that process might take 10 years to complete. Why should Sasol, which was funded by the state, whatever comes to this way, whose shareholders are mainly pension funds, they must go and in the legal process and chit-chat with Sasol for a very long time about an issue that everyone else agrees that will benefit the country with regards to the plastic and the fertilizer level. It's one of the things that must look into, but also Sasol leadership must look into itself of what really are the interests. Is that quick money or is it about sustainable development of the country? It's some of the things that must be dealt with more concretely.
Thank you, Honorable. Honorable Sopo.
Mine is in relation to the operation of infrastructure. If Sasol really can come out very clear, as they say they are supporting the national development imperative as regards their particular strategy, if it has given more information around the investment they are doing in communities. Because sometimes we are not really happy in the manner in which industries are implementing or putting infrastructure in our particular communities in the country. And also the type of investment you are also putting in relation to African business. The second question I have, which is also a concern, Chairperson, that Sasol is proud that it is creating jobs, but it is temporary jobs which goes up to 20,000. My own view is, how long does it take? What benefits are those employees are getting out of that particular program? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sopo. The Honorable Fad has just given me something to write. I'm not too sure, Honorable Fad, what is it he wants to write about? Do you want me to read this? Okay. The Honorable Fad has submitted a note here to me, and it reads as follows. Sasol pricing of intermediate products has been subject to competition enforcement cases the latest of which is the Competition Commission versus Tassel Chemical Industries case on the pricing of polypropylene, and where the Competition Tribunal found the FDI to have been pricing these two products excessively to the detriment of the downstream plastic conversion industry. Sasol Chemical Industry has appealed this decision and applied for suspension of the orders of the Competition Tribunal, including the remedy which seeks to remove the price discrimination against local customers. In this application, SCI submits that their polymer business has been making losses in recent years. However, an interrogation of the annual reports shows that at the time of the polymers business was making losses, the synthetic fuels business increased profits substantially. This is confirmed by the Chief Financial Officer's review, and I quote, although South African polymer business reflects increases in both production and sale volume, this increase was offset by the continued margin squeeze experienced in South African polymers business, where feedstock prices are taxable to itself or internal transfer prices outweigh the increases in selling prices. So I think that the Honourable Fuzz would offer some comment or reflection on that particular issue. From myself, on page 9 you mentioned that you were the first company in the world to get approval for putting synthetic jet fuel and being used as a commercial fuel. Why are we unable to do that in motor vehicles? Why are we look, I didn't do science in school, I do admit that, maybe I should have, and we are trying to get more students to do science, I do know that. But why are we not looking to create synthetic fuels into motor vehicles which would be able to drive down the cost of transport, business, etc.? Is that something that could not be looked at in the pipeline? Colleagues, with that said, I'm going to hand over to Sasol for a response, and then we will close this particular session. Sorry, and then I'll also give the minister an opportunity to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think firstly, let me firstly just express my thanks to the members for the questions and the comments. And I would like to just to firstly start off by saying I fully agree with the minister that this is more than just reading. This is about adding value. This is about, at the end of the day, updating a product and making sure that we can take more value out of it. I think more importantly, we have said in our presentation, we are very much in, what's the word I should use, appreciative of the approach that the Minister has expressed today in terms of the collaborative approach which has supports. We have stated in our that we have today that this is the way we think it will be best for us to take the country forward and put in place a socio-economic base that will benefit all of those that are concerned. I think specifically on the discount that the Minister has said, and then one of the members also raised, this is something that I cannot kind of comment on, specifically because this is something that I need to take back to my leaders and seniors and engage with. And as you would also know that I think the Honourable Fuss has already mentioned that we have appealed a particular matter, but we will be more than prepared to provide a written response to that particular question once we've been able to consult with our leadership. I think if I can then go to some of the questions that were asked, and I'm going to go to the more easier one first, and I'm going to allow my colleague, Mike Visible, to take the difficult one. Because I think the honorable and dear students at the time in school, and I'm an engineering company, and I'm not an engineer, you can understand how challenging I feel. But I think to start with the last question first, and let us thank most of the fuel that you make, synthetic fuel, that has come from, in fact, the coal disposal. So those fuels are produced in our facility. Maybe coming back to honorable Shabam's question about fuel oil. Something that I did not mention is if you look at this particular slide, the last, the one right at the bottom, and someone reading my pointer, not working, you for tea, and I'll try and use this part here. It says crude oil. We do in fact have a crude oil facility, which is in front of Melbourne in Sattler, which is called the NAPEC facility. It's a joint venture between Sattler and Total. And we actually do procure crude oil on the international market and we ship it down, pipeline from Germany into the inner area. And then, in fact, we also process crude oil specifically. One of the reasons that some of this will assist us, some of the investments we are making, if you look at this slide here, once again, I'll use my computer. This is where we are, in fact, looking at upstream opportunities. And that is where we are storing for oil and gas. And if we buy oil and gas in significant quantities, of course, that will certainly assist in being able to benefit our own local resources. At the moment, we do not have, from a country perspective, crude oil or visible crude oil reserves, and that's why we have to import those the crude oil systems. If I go to the question raised, maybe the comment by Honorable Matale, I think I've sort of half meant it's a comment question, but it was also about the minister's proposal. As I said, we are more than happy to revert to this committee at an appropriate time. But specifically, what more can we do for beneficiation? If you look at this particular slide, this is some of the things we do today. We certainly hope we can do more. That's why we have determined on our 2050 strategy, which will in fact then tell us we will take it into 2050 and beyond. Link that question to the Honourable Mantashi's question, where what is the mining aspect involved? As a matter of fact, because of the fact that we do not have enough coal and enough gas, we have to go and secure the right for the coal in order to mine it, so that we know that we have security of supply, so that we can in fact then go ahead and know that our operations will be sustainable until the year 2050. We have recently actually secured enough feedstocks up until 2040. So what that really in fact means, the 14 million rand investment that we are making, is opening up a new mine and a new shop where we will in fact start new mining activities in order to feed to as feedstock for maybe to give you some more detail on that. Our Flacco mining activity is part of our upstream. In fact, in terms of mining charter, we actually exceed the 36% BEE requirement comfortably in terms of our shareholders, so, our shareholding of that economic development partners. So in that specifically, those decisions are taken, of course, with our partners as well. If I look at the comments with regard to how we skill our people and how we skill our contractors, absolutely. I think this is something that we are very passionate about. We invest quite a bit of money, just not with the universities, but also with schools. As a matter of fact, just last week or 2 weeks ago, we had the TechnoX exhibition in Sattler, where we saw more than 20,000 learners walk through those doors from a science perspective. They were able to experience science in a sort of easy environment, if you want to call it, instead of sitting across different classes. That is something we'll also be doing in Sekunda for next year. So there are a number of these initiatives that we are involved in. I would also like to then provide a written response both to the two honorable members with regard to both our skill development as well as our the question regarding what more do we do in our community. As a matter of fact, I want to be so grateful as to say, I mean, invite the committee to come and visit us in Sekunda and Sattler and show you what we do on our second disaster program, which in fact the 800 million rand that I have referred to. We have just signed the MOU with the Free State not too long ago, and we'd be more than happy to not just invest some of those issues and clarify on the issues that you need clarifying, but also then provide you more background about Central and Washington. Just trying to make sure that I've covered everything before I hand over to my colleague. I think I've answered. So I'm going to hand over to Mike. Mike,
can I just say that we are, according to the Honourable House's notes, to have funds in which we are scheduled to give her 5 minutes for concluding remarks, or the work of the committee at 12:35. So 12:45. I will need to give the Honourable Minister some time to respond, and I'm sure that he's going to need 10 minutes. So if you can please. You've got 13 minutes to finish up.
Honourable Chairman, Honourable Members, the issue of writing came up a number of times with the same economists. I'm going to talk to all of you in general on the topic. I'd just like to contextualise national first of all in Parliament. We have had itself produces water in Parliament, we use PVC, we use polypropylene, which has been the topic we must be clear about. Competition Commission very recently. We produce high low density polyethylene and we produce near low density polyethylene. Four different processes, all operating quite independently of each other. We tend to associate the polymer business with the story we've seen with polypropylene over the last few months, over the last year in fact. Polypropylene plastic has surplus, so we supply locally and we export the products. In all other instances, Sapa does not have the ability to supply the South African market. So the needs here are supplemented by our imports to varying degrees. By our estimates, we can vary between 60% of the market share up to around 85 or 90%, depending on the product we're talking about. And again, as I said, we export as well. So when we talk about pricing and our price of this year, we need to bear in mind that for the majority of what is coming in, this country is indeed to import. That's what doesn't have the ability to beneficiate any further. We're constrained by the feedstock we have out of our successful living secondary operations. We've looked at novel technologies to see if we are able to beneficiate or provide these feedstocks via our alternative technologies and do not have a need to do that. So today we are constrained by where we can go. On the matter of pricing, and I really prefer to come back in writing because this is a complex subject, we really have seen over the period 2009 to 2012 such prices come down in normal terms by around 8%. So this is a business which has 10% steam protection of the order of 8 to 10 depending on the products, and over the period 2009 to 2012 duties went away. And with this, pricing was adjusted. We've not yet seen the growth in the business that one would expect with the effective reduction in pricing, but I guess this is already there as well, 2 or 3 years on from those price reductions. I'd just like to respond to the Honourable Scott's question about, in particular, about the losses experienced in the polymer business. This is the profits you record in Central. The polymer business much bigger again than just polypropylene, PVC and the polyethylene. With this we have a chlor-alkali business, which produces sodium cyanide and a whole bunch of caustic soda which goes into the mining industry and a range of other derivatives. So when we look at this, you need to see this as a combination, not just any one product in isolation. For Sasol, we do have an alternative for the feedstocks which go into these polymers. We have invested consciously over the last 10, 15 years to add value and put into polymers. We have the alternative. We have the option of investing and putting this into fuel. And with changes in regulation on clean fuels coming up in the next 4 or 5 years, we will actually back out on some of our polymers and will be required to put this back into fuel to meet some specification needs. So just a bit of contextualization on this. It's a very complex story. And when we talk about polypropylene, it's only one of many of the polymers we produce. And has its own unique dynamics as well compared to polyethylene.
Thank you. For my list, it looks like the questions have been answered. I'm on the way. Do you feel the same? All right, thank you. Minister, over to you.
much. Let me just say, I think I was trying to address two different things. Maybe I got them a little bit mixed up. So first of all, there's the question of the mining products that are going to be beneficiated, like the PGMs. And the Honourable Shilabu is correct that there is a toolbox in the NPRDA, but those amendment bills have not been signed into law at this point in time. But I think you can take it for granted that we're using that toolbox to support beneficiation. So it's not just a voluntary thing that we're asking people to support. I think we'll be using that toolbox. I said there are also other things in the toolbox. I ran through some of the elements in the toolbox. That's a really critical thing. The only thing I really wanted to do today was to make a case for why we need a price discount. Secondly, we've got the upstream capital-intensive companies which do involve themselves in some level of beneficiation, but of essentially suppliers to downstream. And here, I think, as the Honourable Shabab brought your attention to, there have been a number of findings by the competition authorities about collusive or monopoly pricing, findings against them. Both of them have had rulings against them. Now, I don't want to go into the particular case because it is the subject potentially of an appeal. But I think all of you say is that we will not hesitate to follow through with those kind of investigations. We will continue to ensure that we don't have import parity pricing. How can we have import parity pricing? I mean, some of the import parity pricing policies that are in this country were saying we must even add in the cost of transport, as though the product came from overseas and then was transported inland. That was all factored in. But product which actually came from the land. And that would mean that we were not just not getting an advantage, we were getting an absolute disadvantage. That was the factor. So what I'm saying is that we would prefer, and we're offering this, we will have an engagement, and let me care, that's going to be a robust engagement. We're prepared to have engagement with those companies about changing those practices, and if they do, we'll work with them to support them in a number of ways. If they don't, then we're going to be backing in the competition authorities. That's what I think the case is going to be. So let me take the question of the island. Let's not forget that when ISCOR was unbundled into what is now the Seychelles Island Company, which is part of Anglo American, and what is now ArcelorMittal, when it was unbundled, there was an agreement in place because originally ISCOR was involved in iron mining as well as in steel making. And the agreement at that time was that 21.4% of the output decision, which is one source of iron in South Africa, would be made available at a cost of 3%. And the quid pro quo was the steelmaker who got benefited from that was supposed to deliver a competitive steel price. That's what's supposed to happen. Now, that issue was a court case which took years and years and years was finally resolved about the ownership of that 21.4%. But the court ruling says that it belongs to the Seychelles Island Company, but the government can impose conditions around the use of that. Now, let's make no mistake about it. If we can't have a conversation with ArcelorMittal, we will go back to that, and we will use what we can in the toolbox to ensure that that 21.4% of the cost of 3% or something like that is made available to whoever can produce steel in South Africa. In a bottom quartile of work process. If the current company can't do it, then we will be looking for somebody else. I think that's the advantage. We've got to ensure that steel manufacturing in South Africa supports local industry. I would say that at the moment, it's not. We've not only got a high steel price, we've also got non-production of we've got a decline in steel production, as I already mentioned. We've also got non-production of a number of products which are needed by downstream steel manufacturers. That's the basis of which we see imports. It's not an exogenous range of imports coming in here and is not in the local steel manufacturer. If that is the case, and we can establish something like that, we will not hesitate to support the steel manufacturer. But the steel manufacturer's got obligations to pass on the benefits to support downstream manufacturers. I guess some figures, if you hear from downstream steel manufacturer, steel product users, the price of steel is a significant factor. So I think that we will be using what's in the toolbox. You can take it for granted that if we are not able to find this each other, in that group, and then we will have to act to meet the tumult. I said when I put this to the leadership of ArcelorMittal International, I said, why don't we have this conversation? Because I used to use a quotation from a well-known desert philosopher in the 19th century. We were debating this price, and for a long time they told us it wasn't the import parity price, it was something else. But we said, well, the trend line is the same. And I said, the thing is, it's not to have a philosophical debate about how the price is determined. The point is to change it. That's the point. So that we're actually moving to that place. So I said, let's change the conversation. You come and tell us. If you want to make steel in South Africa, and you look at what you look at yourself in the bottom quarter, what does it take? And then we'll see what we can do. If we have that conversation, that could be that right conversation. If not, well, we have to, just already, if people tell us they can, well, let's see if they can put their money where their mouths are. Because I think we definitely need to find this point. We cannot have non-availability of steel products or declined availability of steel products, high prices of steel products. And the same, I must say, with all due respect of monuments, we can't have this as an impediment to where the real manufacturing capacity is downstream. I don't deny, and I think the DG said this as well, that we have a big energy constraint in South Africa, which is a huge problem for manufacturing. We've got to solve that. We've got to solve probably plenty of other issues to make the manufacturing environment more conducive and supportive. But the price of mineral-based products is fundamentally important. I think that we have to do everything we can to ensure that we get that. And I think that's that would be my message. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. A very interesting word there, no doubt. I think the debate just stopped on this issue. So thank you for that. Colleague, I'm now going to hand over to the whip of our committee, the Honourable Soho, to give us some concluding remarks. Thank you for indulging me. I hope I did the debate justice. Over to you, Honourable Whip.
Thank you,
Chair.
I'm not going to word it. I'll speak from one. The portfolio committee welcomes the presentation to shareholders today. And also, we'd like to thank all of you for your robust engagement, including members. We are not excluding you. The purpose of this collection is the value addition, especially downstream. The DTI portfolio committee remains concerned that samples have not addressed this area constructively. Directly, and we hope next time we have this particular curriculum again, we'll come out very transparent as to how best you understand this particular name. We also welcome the attendance of DTI and the minister, and also the observation and grants we have done today, because we have planted the debate around this particular curriculum. Minister, many challenges were raised by the presentations which were done. And some of them are not within the portfolio committee on DTI. I'm sure you have addressed one of the areas which is the area of serious concern to present us on industries in South Africa, which is energy. I think all others were also raised. We should have to prepare a report and present to Parliament before that they are referred to the relevant portfolio committees to quickly address them because they don't belong to us. Some of the questions which were raised were around ownership, which was not responded by all presenters. I don't understand why they didn't come out very clear around this particular issue, because it is also a matter of serious concern for us. We hope in future industries will come out very clear on this particular matter. Lastly, Chair, forestry and timber must also address how best are they going to support small growers, because they also didn't come out very clear during this particular presentation. And the last item I have, Chair, is to make an announcement to members and also to participants. As of tomorrow, we'll be having another session at this particular colloquium from 9 to 12 o'clock. where we'll be having an input by Sundance and transfer pricing and other information within the mining industry. And the other input will be from Professor Ben Chirok. I think we have those two presentations because we have agreed that Wednesday will be shorter days for a portfolio committee. Those will be two areas which will be discussed tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Whip. Honourable members, Minister, EDG, guests, I think that that concludes today's portfolio. Thank you for attending.
You know when you were